You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast. This is the Walking Dead debrief for Episode 5.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points Podcast for December 12th, 2012, and George and I are shambling towards the end.
Oh, it's come. The time has come.
The time has come. Not the Mayan apocalypse.
Well, that pretty soon.
That's yet to come.
Couple weeks.
Before it does, we are going to talk about the end of Telltale's The Walking Dead series.
And Scott, we've been with this game for a while now.
Well, I mean, it's funny because you have played it, what, since the summer?
Yeah, since like, episode one came out, shortly after it came out, yeah.
And that was like, what, July or August or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like I started playing it in October, maybe. And so, yeah, I mean, this has been like an extended, like, you know, multi-month playthrough of this episodic game, which finally came to an end.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a fourth, wow, man. And also countless Walking Dead posts as well. We've both written about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I guess, you know, in terms of trying to structure it, you know, it's almost inherently spoilerish, right?
Yeah, and it has to be. And, you know, I want to say from the beginning that maybe we should talk about the whole thing altogether right now. But I think that's a waste if we haven't yet talked about the final moments of this game.
Yeah.
Because I feel like so much of what we experience in episode 5 relates to the entire experience of playing The Walking Dead's 1 through 5.
Mm-hmm.
So all I can say before we start, though, is the same thing I've been saying every episode. You should play this game.
Yes.
You should really play this game if you haven't
George
already.
And I were talking about before the podcast that, like, when we run into people that, you know, just have a passing interest in video games, we're both like, you should really play The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, and I've been telling my coworkers, too, who have been talking about The Walking Dead TV series, right? Yeah. Every time it comes up in conversation, I'll be like, oh, by the way, the best iteration of any Walking Dead fiction is this game right here. You need to play it.
Does it almost, as a weird side note, it makes me kind of irritated because my coworkers are the same way. They're like, oh man, I just watched The Walking Dead TV, you know, last night. It was so crazy. And it's like, I'll tell you what's crazy. The Walking Dead video game.
Yeah, like, have you killed a man to save a child?
Yeah.
Have you done this? You know what I mean? Like, all of those things. They don't get it. They don't get it, Scott.
So we're definitely evangelizing it. So I guess what we'll do is, you know, we'll talk about episode 5 and then transition into kind of how it relates to the rest of the series and some wrap-up thoughts about both, you know, the story in general, and also I think the form itself is really interesting as well.
Absolutely. But first, before we do that, can we talk a little bit about our fears and trepidations going into this episode?
We had I feel like we had many off-podcast conversations where we actually were like, okay, here's probably is what's gonna happen. And one of the things that I said is exactly what happened.
That's totally correct, yes.
But yeah, I was pretty worried.
Well, I mean, and as we ended episode 4, right, you had abandoned all of your friends. You were Lee going it alone, right?
Yep.
You were the rogue wolf. I
the
was
rogue
going with everybody.
Wolf.
I was joined by Ben and Kenny and the rest of the squad.
You had everyone, right? It was all people?
I had all the people,
man.
Scott.
Wow.
But jeez. I think both of our fears were that when you have a game that's doing so well, and so much of this is about, well, do your decisions matter? How is this going to pay off in the end? I think there's always a legitimate fear that they'll stumble, right? Like, we don't want a Lost. We don't want a Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
Right? We don't want all of this to be tarnished by really poor decisions in the end.
Yeah.
And I was scared of that. Like, I was genuinely, you know, I had a lot of faith in them because Telltale has already made something awesome with the first 4 episodes.
Right.
But I'm not going to lie. I wasn't sure how they could possibly end this in a way that would feel 100% satisfactory.
Yeah, I agree. At finishing something, like, in general, like, game endings tend to be kind of weird. But I mean, this is just on a completely higher level because the narrative is so important to the game. And also, the multi-month experience is much like a Lost or Battlestar Galactica, like you were saying. So it's a, it has like, it was facing the how to end a video game problem, but also just how to end a long narrative arc problem too.
Yeah. And there were also some weird things that they did in the latter episodes, right? The sort of the voiceless character on the walkie-talkie.
Yep.
Like, we didn't really know who this was. I remember you and I were a little hesitant going into episode 4 about that story arc because we didn't, you know, who was, why is this coming out of nowhere? Like, who is this person? Is this going to be a sort of caricature of a villain? Mm-hmm. You know, like, there was a lot of fear that this person would become something that was an easy escape or some excuse to put Clementine in danger to end the game in the sort of way we expect it to end.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's really, I mean, if nothing more, it's a pretty brave thing to introduce what could potentially be like a major villain, like more than halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, they kind of carried through with that as well, which is something that we'll talk about obviously when we get into it.
But so let's get into some of the first decisions then, shall we?
All right. So the first, you know, Lee goes back to, we end episode 4 with the kind of the survivors from kind of the people that Crawford left behind in the town.
Mm-hmm.
They took Clementine, or someone took Clementine at least, and Lee goes back to try to save her while he's infected. So I was alone when this was happening. You know, I was walking. Yeah. Were you walking around in the morgue, basically?
I mean, I wasn't alone. There was the whole group there, yeah.
Okay, but you still went to the morgue.
I still went to the morgue. They were gone. Clearly, they had abandoned the place in a hurry.
Yes. And so you have this choice. Lee is infected. He's kind of on the brink of passing out every once in a while. Waves of zombie sickness are kind of starting to become more frequent as he's infected. And you have the choice as to try to remove the arm that was bitten.
That's right.
I did not remove the arm.
Oh, Scott, great minds think alike. I also did not remove the arm.
All right, because you know what? Because I think we are men of science, and we realize that, like, if you are infected by some kind of, you know, blood-borne pathogen, cutting off a single limb is not going to purify your blood.
Yeah, this isn't like a slow-moving rattlesnake bite. Like, you're screwed, right? Yeah. Like, there's unless someone sucked out the poison hours ago when you were first bitten, chopping your arm off isn't going to do much good.
Right.
Also, I should say, he might need that arm, you know? Like,
yep.
Surgery, especially with a hacksaw, is not necessarily going to go well, right? There's going to be loss of blood. He's going to be passing out. Who's to say that the disease that you inflict upon yourself through the loss of an arm is worse than the zombie infection?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I figured that Lee is basically on a death march. Like, he's going to... This is the end of Lee. But why cripple yourself before you can make your final stand, you know?
And we made the decision, right? Going into this game, we knew. Yeah. You and I, in our conversation, we both were like, you know what? He's a dead man.
Yeah.
Now it's just about saving Clementine.
Yeah.
So the idea of like, oh, maybe I'll try to save myself is, you know.
That doesn't, weird. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. That being said, I do think that, you know, and I recently had a conversation with some of the guys at Pot Matters, and I mentioned this as well, but I think that giving you the choice to chop off Lee's arm, I think is indicative of how strongly they think players feel towards Lee. Like, because I think the implicit assumption here is that there's a chance, right, if they chop his arm off, that he survives.
Yeah.
And despite how drastic of a move it is, a majority of people, at least when I played it, chopped his arm off. Like, over 60% of people.
Yeah, that was me too. When I played it, it was me and 21% of other players.
That's crazy to me that so many people would choose to chop his arm off. And I think part of it is because there's a desperation for wanting to keep him alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being able to tap into that desperation is really smart. Like, they know. We like Lee. We want Lee to survive. I want Lee to survive, right? Like, I didn't chop his arm off, but there was a moment, I'm not going to lie, there was a moment where I was thinking, gosh, maybe this would do something.
Yep. Yeah. It's like almost that bargaining thing. Like, okay, if I do this, maybe, you know, maybe it will be enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Lee then... It's weird. I guess not to dwell on this for too long, but were the people... I was alone. I had to make this decision alone.
So did you, like, just get a saw or, like, on your own? Like, maybe I should do this.
Yeah, I mean, he was, like, Lee looked at the, you know, the morgue tools, and he was like, that saw still looks sharp. You know, maybe I should do this. Maybe it could stop something. And then I was like, nah, I can't. I don't have time. Who knows if it would make a difference.
Wow, that's crazy.
What did the people say when you were like, what did Kenny and everyone say when you were thinking about it?
Well, I wasn't. It was them that were thinking about it.
Oh God. Yeah, they were like, "Hey Lee, maybe you should do this."
Well, so Lee passes out and he wakes up and they're talking about it, and Kenny's got the saw and your arm is like has a like a rubber surgical thing to
Oh man, so he's like taped off the stinted the arm already and everything.
Ugh. Oh yeah, they were ready to go. They're like, we're doing this, Lee. Like, are you ready? And I'm like, whoa, no. Yeah.
So did they let you out? You just say no, and they are like, all right, well, you know, yeah. Your funeral.
Yeah, you shout, you stop, and you tell them like, no, there's no point. You know, I do kind of like that moment when there's other people, and I'm glad that, because I wasn't sure how it would be for you with people not there. I'm glad I had that experience with people there, because you also. You know, like I said, with the sense of hope, I think you also get that sense of desperation in those individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, like Kenny kind of wishes that he could, not to stop you from becoming a zombie, but like to stop you from dying, right? Like he doesn't want you to die. It's not purely out of selfish interest.
Okay, so they were doing it to, they were hoping to salvage Lee as well. They weren't doing it to kind of, I'm just trying to get a read on the tone of the group. You know, they were doing it for Lee rather than for themselves.
That was my reading of it. I mean, okay. I think there's always the, when in this type of scenario, there's always a sort of underlying self-preservation thing going on.
Yes, and I think
they do capture that in that scene.
Cool.
Yeah.
I thought that climb up the elevator shaft was pretty intense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, one of the cool things about the way that Lee passes out over and over again throughout this game is that because your first decision is whether or not to chop his arm off, you're always thinking about whether or not you made the right one.
Yep,
right?
Like, precisely.
Because you know that, okay, he's passing out again. Is that because I didn't chop my arm off? Like, should I have done it? Like, what have I done, right?
Yeah.
And if you chopped his arm off, you're thinking, gosh, maybe the loss of blood, right? Maybe that's why he's passing out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was exactly what I was thinking, too. I was like, well, you know, like maybe the virus would have been halted at least a little bit, you know? Yeah, so that was neat. So, you know, but you and the whole party basically made that climb up the elevator shaft.
Yeah, they did. And you sort of, they're like, Lee, wait, I mean, this is crazy, though. So when do your friends come back, if ever?
They came back kind of after, like, you meet back up with them. Mm-hmm. Like, you see, let's see, when you get back out. You make the jump off the roof. Did you do that? Like, you kind of set up a ladder and make the jump off?
Yeah, and you, like, did that all by yourself.
I did that all by myself. Oh, my God. Wow. And then I finally got back to the house, and they were all locked up in the boat shed. Like, someone had stolen the boat from them and locked them all up in the boat shed.
Oh, I see.
So they basically Shanghai'd the boat. Like, the people, the ex-Crawfordites had basically, you know, betrayed our party, and then, you know, lock them up in the mansion.
Right.
So that's how I linked back up with everybody.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, they stole the boat in my game as well. It's just interesting that, because one of my concerns was that, oh, they'll just bring these people and have a lame excuse. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like it was a lame excuse, or did it feel genuine to you that they returned to your side?
I mean, you know, there was a conversation once I freed them again from the boat shed. They were like, you know, hey, you know, what happened? Where were you? What is going on? And then Lee revealed the bite, and then they were just kind of dumbstruck by it. But
because you kept the bite completely secret.
Oh yeah, I kept the bite completely secret. and so that was the first time they found out. And then Lee quickly started, you know, saying, you know, the point is not to worry about me, but the point is to go find Clementine. So, you know, you can come with me if you want, but, you know, we have to go, you know?
Right.
And so that's when we went back into the mansion and kind of got besieged by the walkers.
Yeah, I like that scene in the mansion. That was there's a cool moment of desperation and knowing that you don't have enough bullets to win.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah. That was one of the things in The Walking Dead, the earlier episodes, that kind of bothered me, because I feel like people were really cavalier about their ammo.
Yeah.
And this was one of the only situations where I really felt that sense of ammo scarcity. It's like, hey, you have 5 shots. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, there are more than 5 walkers, so...
Yeah, and I remember there's the moment when you're all barricaded in the hallway, and they're all talking about how, like, make your shots count.
Yep.
And I specifically waited until I felt everyone had taken their shots before I took mine, because I didn't want to waste... Because
your best shot.
Yeah, like, because I didn't... Well, that, and I didn't want to waste two people's ammo on the same zombie.
Yep.
Accidentally firing at the same time.
Yeah.
So I basically was waiting it out until finally taking them out. And I, you know, every single one was a headshot. I felt really proud. But right. You know, all of that, that whole scene is so exciting and well done, I feel like. It was a really cool moment to feel like not only was I fighting a losing battle, but I was doing it intelligently and, like, trying to manage and...
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like, the whole game, this episode in particular, I feel like is really heavily driven by the sense of, I have to get to this place, right? Like, there's just a sheer amount of desperation that the other episodes I don't think had.
Mm.
And I think that's represented in the lack of general downtime in this episode. I think it's represented in, like, how severe a lot of the situations Lee faces is. Mm. And that scene was one of the more high-stakes moments of zombies attacking you. And I think it fits really well into that sort of, that frenetic pacing.
And it's also bookended by something that, like, kind of like the low level constant tension, because they escape the hallway, get up into the attic, and they realize that they're just kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not stuck in a safe place. Like, they're stuck in an inherently unsafe place, because eventually the house will collapse, or the zombies will get up, or they'll just starve, or Lee will turn into a zombie
and kill everybody. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And so it's like,
And that level of desperation is still there, you know? Like, he... I mean, the episode's called, what, No Time Left, right?
Yep.
We know Lee, like, is on death's door.
Yeah.
So every single moment they're stuck in that attic is like, oh, gosh, this isn't downtime for me. This is stressful. Like, mm-hmm. I want to get out of here. I want them to break open the wall already, because this is taking too much time.
Right. So when you finally crashed through the wall and escaped the mansion... What happened to your party after that? Because there's a couple different things that I feel like could happen.
Okay.
There's a point where you're on the, you know, you head towards the hotel where you think Clementine is being held.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, gosh, who was it? It was just me, Kenny, Krista, and Omid. And, you know, we were walking along the rooftops trying to get to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, Kenny bumps into Lee, and the walkie-talkie falls into a hole on the roof that leads down to one of the floors of the buildings.
Right.
And it is not a good place to go down. It's like a dark... There could probably be a lot of zombies in there.
That's right.
So that same thing happened to you?
I believe so. I don't remember the walkie-talkie dropping, but I do remember the hole in the ceiling.
Okay.
So that must have happened, I guess. Yeah. But where was Ben at this point?
Ben was dead. Remember, I let him go.
Oh my gosh, Scott, that's crazy. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, Ben, I let Ben drop in the bell tower in the last episode.
So do you know what happens to Ben if you did not let that happen?
No, what happens to him?
All right, so I mean, this might come as a bit of shock. You jump over from a balcony onto a rooftop,
mm-hmm.
pretty shortly, I think, after you leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
And in that scene, Ben is the last to jump, and he falls into the alleyway
mm-hmm.
and breaks probably a lot of his bones, and as well as gets like a spear of metal through his chest.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. And so Kenny goes down there, and because Kenny basically has a heart to heart with Ben, right, in the attic, and they sort of, both you and Kenny, come to blows
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Yeah.
And then you get the sense that Kenny has this, I guess, an understanding of Ben, at least in terms of you know, being a parent, being a survivor in the situation.
Because, I mean, Ben was the one that originally, after many, many mishaps, led to Kenny's kid being bitten, because he was kind of giving away food to the road agents and stuff. And
right, that's right. Yeah. But, you know, he admits that in one of their fights, I think it happened in this episode, but it could be wrong, Ben basically says, well, at least you know your family's dead. I have no idea what happened to mine. They're probably zombies somewhere, mm-hmm. right? Like, you got to say goodbye. I didn't. Like, I'm trying to do everything I can to make things right, despite my errors, mm-hmm. right? And so you sort of get this growth between Kenny and Ben, and it leads to the scene where zombies are coming down the alleyway, and Ben doesn't want to die by becoming a zombie, and you leave, and Kenny and Ben presumably die.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is completely not what happened to Kenny in my episode.
Interesting. I mean, because you're missing out almost, because there's this... I mean, I know Kenny's a great guy and whatnot, but there's this... and you hated Ben so with such a passion.
Mm.
But there's this great scene where basically you leave Kenny and he's got a limited number of bullets, and it's unclear whether or not he died, whether or not he shot Ben to put him out of his misery and then killed himself before the zombies mm-hmm. could get to them. Like, there's this... really weird and heated scene, and it's interesting that you didn't have that at all.
I had a similar one when we were heading to the hotel where, you know, we're all talking and the walkie-talkie accidentally falls down, kind of, you know, it sounded like a similar setup. It falls down into a hole, you know, onto the second floor of the building. And then Krista jumps down there to try to get it, like, right away. And before we could say, hey, stop it. And then she grabs the walkie-talkie, but then it's clear that there are a lot of zombies in that room. And she can't quite get up. She can't reach back up to the ceiling to get back onto the roof. And so instead, you have, again, like, Lee and Kenny kind of have this heart-to-heart, like, what is going to happen, and you know, they have an argument about what is the best thing to do, you know, survival versus caring for people, like, you're going to have to make some hard decisions. And then after that conversation, Kenny was like, well, I guess I better put my money where my mouth is. And then he jumps down into the hole, boosts Krista up back to the roof, and then makes his last stand against walkers.
Wow. Do you see him die?
No, he runs into the room. He runs into the, like, past the hole where you can see, right. And all you hear is bullets, but you don't see ultimately what happens to him.
Crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, season two, Kenny could very well be alive.
Yeah. I'm almost certain he will.
Yeah.
It's less likely that he survives my situation because there were so many zombies. I mean, right. he'd have to be a badass to get out of that situation. But season two, I think I would like to see him come back. I think it makes a lot of sense.
That's a pretty wild swing, because I feel like Kenny is a hard character to like at many times.
Yeah, but I feel like his arc has been relatively consistent, right? Like, it's something he struggled with.
Yeah.
He lost his wife and son, right? Yep. Like, and maybe this episode it's a little bit too rushed, but I do get the sense that he's growing as a character.
Yeah. No, I think so. It's just, it is an impressive little piece of character work to make a character that kind of swings back and forth between likable and unlikable and heroic versus self-interested and stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, at this point, I'm on the rooftops trying to get over to the hotel, and I'm just with Krista and Omid, and I start to make my way over kind of like a sign. Yeah, it's like suspended between two buildings. Mm-hmm. Is that where you get to eventually?
That is where I get to eventually, yes.
Okay, but you're still with Krista and Omid, right?
Yep, Krista and Omid are still there. Yeah. Out of curiosity, though, before we move on to the next part, when you're in the attic, who do you tell what you should do with Clementine when you find her? Because you know you're dying, right?
Oh,
I think
you have
an option of saying, Kenny, I want you to take her, or I want you to find her a good family, or Krista and Omid take her.
I told Krista and Omid to take her. Am I just imagining this? I'm under the impression Krista is pregnant.
So I had no idea that this was the case, but Chris Williams from Pop Matters said the same thing.
Yeah.
And apparently it makes sense. Like, they have little arguments, I guess. And
well, and also, I think at a certain point, like, she vomits or something. Yeah. And, like, the classic trope of any TV show, movie, or video game is when, is when, like, a young woman vomits, she's pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's certain points
maybe
where
she's
Omid
just been
says
drunk.
Something. Well, that's the thing. Like, she doesn't drink until one time in the attic where it's kind of dramatic when she drinks.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so she's been kind of, like, she's been a little bit more removed from the drinking and also from certain parts of the violence. Like, Omid has been saying, hey, you shouldn't do that, you know? So it's like, I get the sense that she's pregnant. I don't know. I just, you know, Kenny is just not stable, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's why I said, what did you say?
I said the same thing, yeah. And part of it is, you know, Krista and Omid lived this long.
Yeah.
And they have this great blend where Krista is a pragmatist, but Omid is also, like, funny and he likes to keep things lighthearted.
Right.
So if anyone's going to raise Clementine, like, why would some random family be better than these two?
Yeah.
My one concern, though, is now that she's pregnant, she's just going to, like, forget you, Clementine. I got my own child to raise.
Yeah. So it'll be, I mean, I hope that happens in the next season, but that's kind of getting ahead of ourselves.
Right.
So both of us got to the point where we're inching across the suspension bridge sign.
Yep.
Okay. And then
it collapses.
It collapses. And then I told Krista and Omid that I would meet up with them, you know?
Yeah.
like don't bother following or whatever.
I told them to go find a boat, which I sort of immediately regretted.
I told them to, like, you know, wait, we'll meet up with you or something.
Right.
But I don't see them again for the rest of the episode.
That's right.
And you didn't see them again either?
Nope. Okay. Well, we'll talk about that.
Yes, yeah, so I guess there's a possibility that we did see them again. So after that, is like one of the more intense scenes of the entire series.
Yeah, you just kill zombies over and over.
It's kind of cathartic in a way, because Lee knows he's dying. He's not really worried about getting hurt anymore. I mean, he picks up a broken shard of glass and uses it as a dagger.
Yeah, with a hand that, like, doesn't have feeling anymore. Right?
Yeah, so he knows. Because you and I, like,
at least,
yeah.
Because we still had our hand. Oh, man, I wonder
what would have happened if we cut it off.
Yeah, and presumably he'd only have one weapon. I don't know.
I mean, that section was very powerful because they have, like, a non-diegetic soundtrack behind it, and the music is dramatic. And you're at this point where, like, instead of running... It's like the only point in the game where you are aggressively going on the offensive against zombies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because you're right. I mean, there is a level of catharsis there where you're just so glad to finally kill them. Yeah. And two, like, you know, like I said at the end of episode 4, at this point, my Lee just wanted to get shit done, right? It was about just getting through and saving Clementine. And as this episode goes along, he's clearly getting sicker and sicker and sicker, right? Mm-hmm. There's literally no time left. And so the act of just going through and slaughtering those zombies was incredibly satisfying.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you ultimately fight your way into the hotel where Clementine has been kidnapped by the mysterious voice on the radio.
The stranger.
The stranger. And you confront him.
Yep. When you went in the hotel, did you have an idea of who he would be?
Not really. I mean, it was just, I knew he was a man, but that's pretty much it.
So, for those who've played, of course, he turns out to be the man who owned the car in episode 2.
Right.
That the people take all of the food from. Mm-hmm. Or potentially you take the food from. I don't remember your decision.
I didn't take it either. Because Clementine was kind of iffy about it, so I was like, okay, no, it's not right, you know?
The van's outside the hotel, or the hatchback.
Right. I was just about to mention that. Like, once I saw that, it's funny, I saw that and I was like, wait, wasn't that the same, like, that the same station wagon from episode 2? And at first I was like, I kind of meta-psyched myself out. I was like, wait, are they just reusing assets, or is that, like, the same, like, thing, or is this supposed to be, like, an actual story point?
Yeah, I did the same thing. And then when you first sit down with him, one of his things is, like, do you know who I am? And I'm like, oh, shit, I think I do now. I think I do. And, like, I love the scene when you first walk in and see him, right? Like, there's this crazy sense of, like, oh, gosh, like, it's happening. It's now. Mm-hmm. Like, we're finally meeting, and it's real, you know? Like, this could have gone a lot of ways, right? This could have been a scene where Lee sneaks in like a boss and hides in the shadows and then, like, shoots him from afar. Mm-hmm. Or it could have been this super climactic scene where they engage in a fight right off the bat, right? And instead it's a sort of like, okay, well, here we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he's such a normal-seeming person, you know, like, he's not a... Which is nice, like, I was a little bit worried about this, like, he's not a mustache-twirling grandmaster villain, you know?
Yeah.
You could see playing a game where you control him, you know, that is a story happening concurrently with what you had been doing, you know?
Yeah, I think the game does a really good job of changing the way that Lee looks at this point, right? Like, he is emaciated, he's skinny, he's pale, he's clearly sick. The guy across from you, he's just as skinny, you know? He's really pale himself. He's not turning into a zombie, but he's clearly not right psychologically or physically.
Yeah.
And having them sit across from each other in this couch, right, in this scene when you can see them both in a single shot, you can clearly see comparisons, right? Like, both of them have been made to become what you see now based on the world that they exist in.
Yep.
So pretty quickly, you feel bad for the guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's a crazy person, but, like, he didn't want to be in the place that he is now.
Yeah. And you look at them both, like you were saying, and you look at Lee, and it's like, well, you know, with a couple different decisions, that could have been me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he tells the story of his wife and his kid, right? You know that he's a father. And you know that at this point, Lee is becoming and filling this role of a father as well. So, I mean, the fact that those two are such good doubles to each other works so well for making him not this yeah, this crazy villain, or even someone you necessarily hate.
Right. But, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard because he's trying to make right. Like, he's snapped. Like, he's broken psychologically. Like, his family is gone and well, actually, maybe not necessarily gone, since once I saw that bowling bag that he was carrying around, I was like, oh, there is,
what's in the bag? Nothing good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing good inside that bag. Somehow I surrendered my weapons. I don't know exactly how that happened. Do you remember if you had put your gun down?
I did, yeah. Well, because he asks you to take your weapon, so I hid one, and then he says all of them, and then I took that one out as well. Yeah.
I wonder, that's interesting. I wonder if that is just, that's the difference of the choice, whether you surrender it automatically or kind of, you know, piecemeal. But, you know, ultimately it comes to a head. You know, Clementine escapes the closet where she's been locked up by this guy.
Well, first, though, we should say he has basically a Q&A period with you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me of that, because it reminded me kind of other series have done this. It was kind of like the last episode of Seinfeld, or like, you know, other movies and film and games have done this, where it's like a review of what you've done, you know?
Right, right. I don't know what you thought about this, but I was really surprised by how well and how good that felt to me.
Mm.
You know, like, so for a game that's about choices, right? Like, this could have been something like Mass Effect, where we see a montage of all of the things that you've done. Look at what you've become, you know?
Right.
But he's judgmental of you, right? Like, from the beginning, you know, he accuses Lee of taking the food or whatever, and he knows you didn't take it. And you say, hey, you know, it wasn't me. And maybe that can save you. Maybe Lee is justified in being a good person. Mm-hmm. But then he starts going through all of the decisions that you made. And I don't know about you, but one of the first is, I mean, in fact, I know that you didn't do this in episode two, but one of the first things he calls out is that Lee killed someone with a pitchfork right in front of Clementine.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things he says is like, you did that. And I was like, God, I did do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember thinking back to that episode and the way that I felt about that when that happened, and I was immediately regretful of that. I wish I hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to be confronted with that and then have Lee say, yeah, you know, I wish that things had gone differently. And
yeah.
And every question that came up, or every moment where he was saying, you made this decision and it was the wrong one, there was never a moment where I was like, yeah, you know what, screw you, I did make the right decision. For the most part, it was like, yeah, that's not the whole story, or I wish things had gone differently. But, you know, throughout the game, right, throughout episodes 1 through 4, I've never been confident about the choices that my Lee makes.
Mm-hmm.
So to have someone come here and point them out and say, and basically ask you to reconsider all of the choices that you've made, right? And rethink that, yeah, maybe you didn't make the right decisions, I thought was really powerful.
Like you were saying, I think it's more useful than a kind of morally kind of neutral flashback, like you were saying.
Yep.
But the idea that this judgment was coming from someone who is no better than Lee is, and in fact probably much worse than Lee is, because he's carrying around his dead wife's head in a bag.
Yeah. So you're a bit more self-righteous.
Well, I was a bit more, you know, I did say multiple times, like, you know, you weren't there, that's not the whole story, but it's also like, you know, you probably did a lot of weird things too.
Oh yeah, like keeping your wife's head in a bag.
Yeah, and it's like, who, and also like, how does that make kidnapping a little girl and, you know, locking her up any better, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's hard to make a, you know, in my case, I was fairly okay with most of the decisions that I made, but it was, you know, it's just hard to strike that balance, because that guy is clearly messed up, and it's hard to have like a neutral judge when he's, you know, he definitely has his own interests out there.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And, you know, I'm not saying I was like, oh, you can have Clementine, no problems. Like, no, I was pissed. I was going to save Clementine. But I think being confronted with your choices by someone that, I mean, all he's really doing is asking you to rethink what you've done, right?
Yeah, he's an observer, you know?
Yeah, like, think of the situations that you've been in. And I had already done that, you know? Like, I had already been through all of these, even in this episode, right? Like, I was rethinking whether or not I made the right decision with Kenny and Ben in that hallway. I was rethinking whether or not I made the right decision with chopping my arm off, right?
Mm-hmm.
This whole experience of playing The Walking Dead has been about, to me, trying to make good decisions in a situation that it's so hard to measure whether or not is the right one, mm-hmm. right? Because the world is so fucked.
Yeah.
So to have someone call you out and say, like, you made these decisions. Do you genuinely believe they're the right ones? And in the situation like this, I can't always say yes.
Well, and also during this whole conversation, once Clementine sneaks out, you are making one of those decisions while he's asking you about things. Like, you're nodding towards, okay, you know, giving her a wink, like, okay, hit him with that vase or pick up that bat or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, like, at the same time, you are then currently making another decision that is by no means neutral. Like, you're trying to get, I think in my, I forget what exactly happened, but Clementine definitely, like, you know, distracted him somehow.
Yeah.
And then started, Lee started fighting him.
Well, I mean, like, again, in a point-and-click adventure, what a great idea, right? Like, it's making you interact with the point-and-click in the way that you're normally interacting with it, while also making you think critically about how you make those decisions.
Yep. Did you kill him?
I did not. No, Clementine wow. killed him.
What?
Yep. Clementine shot him in the head.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I killed him, you know, Lee killed him in my game. Apparently, only 42% of other people did that, though, so I feel like maybe it was just Clementine or Lee was that choice.
Well, so you go through the choking out period, and I didn't want to push it too hard for fear that I would kill him when I just needed to, like, make him pass out.
Mm-hmm.
But then he started, I don't know, I guess something happened where she presumed that it was the right decision and shot him.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I was the one that shot him afterwards.
Oh, you actually shot him?
Yeah.
Because you could choke him to death, I believe. Like, snap his neck.
I think I shot him after I snapped his neck. I think that's how it died. I hope I'm not making that up.
I hope not. You're not either, because that would be incredibly cruel.
No, it's double tapping, because if you kill him, he's going to become a zombie.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. You didn't really kill him. You killed him once and then put the zombie to death.
Right. Good. I like that. That cleanses my morality.
It does. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man. Did you peek into the bag after that?
I didn't. No, I actually didn't catch that it was his wife's head in there until the game was over.
Oh, man.
And someone else pointed it out.
Yeah, I totally looked in there. And then she said something. Clementine said, like, what's in there? And Lee's like, don't look in there.
Yeah, that's funny. So it was an interesting moment to me when you're alone with Clementine again and you've saved her. Because, mm-hmm. like, there's this moment of, like, triumph, but also, like, she had just killed a guy, which yep. is unfortunate. But mm-hmm. The range of emotions that this episode in particular, like, took me through was crazy. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I went into episode 5 as a sort of, like, free spirit, right? Like, Lee is infected, he's a dead man, therefore he's liberated. He can do whatever he wants. This is great. I'm going to kick some ass. I'm going to go and save Clementine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the moment Clementine is there and you've saved her, it just, like, it went to the exact opposite of, like, no, I'm dying. This isn't fair. Like,
yep.
it was just the complete, you know, whereas before I was confident and unburdened, now I was just, like, distraught. I was like, I can't believe Lee's dying. I should have chopped my arm off. Like, I should have taken any opportunity for saving him that I could, because now, like, now he has Clementine and he can't stay with her. He can't make sure that she's safe.
Yeah, it becomes real again. You know, all of a sudden your responsibility is back and, you know, those decisions you're making are something outside of Lee.
Yeah, I just never expected to have such a switch from feeling like, oh, I'm a dead man, it's okay, to being, oh, I'm a dead man, like, this is not okay, like, this is not fair, I don't want to die.
And especially when because it doesn't get any easier, because when you're trying to fight your way out of the hotel again, you know, you're, like, coating Clementine in, like, the entrails of zombies, so the zombies can't distinguish, mm-hmm. you know, her from other zombies.
And you're so sick at this point, like, you're barely having the strength to lift up organs.
Yeah. And of course this would happen. Clementine sees her parents as zombies on the walk mm-hmm. out of the hotel.
Did you not like that?
I mean, it was fine. I knew it was going to come. That doesn't mean it makes it feel any happier when it happens, you know?
That's true, yeah.
And that's, like, kind of, it's kind of like that and what will come next, obviously, is, like, the watershed moment for her. You know, this will inform her going forward, you know?
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have any hope anymore that her parents are alive. That was her one hope, her one continuous hope through the entire series, was that she was going to find her parents. And the last vestige of her life before the outbreak is now extinguished, you know?
And it was my hope, too, going into this episode, that, that's how the game would end, right? That you would find her parents alive, and she'd go with them as you died, right? Like, that was my thought. Like, oh, this is, that would be, I would be okay with that, because you know that she's safe. But instead, it's a double whammy, where you see her parents, all hope is gone for her, and then she finds out that you're dying.
Yep.
And now she has to lose, like, two parental figures.
Right. And be alone, because who knows where Krista and Omid are. So that's, like, I guess this is, like, the ultimate scene in the game, right? You know, Lee is he's really turning now. He's more than sick. Like, you know, he's really fighting. And you have to get Clementine out of the room and out, you know, outside the city limits.
Yep.
There was, so I guess the setup is kind of interesting. Like, obviously Lee had, like, grabbed a pair of handcuffs from, you know, a dead police officer. Oh, actually, no, Clementine did, right? Because the police officer zombie is stuck in some kind of, like, I don't know, he's stuck in some kind of glass or something like that.
Yeah, there's, like, something on his legs or whatever.
Yeah, and so in order to get out of the building that you're in, Clementine needs to get the keys, and she also grabs the handcuffs. So, you know, obviously I told her to do all that. And then the zombie gets out, right? And this was a pretty, it was a pretty intense scene, because by the point that the zombie gets out, I had already asked Clementine to chain Lee's hand to the radiator so Lee couldn't get at her if he turned.
Oh, really? You do that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I had her chain the zombie's hand to the chair to make it easier to grab the keys.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I cuffed Lee to the radiator, basically.
Wow, stone cold.
Yeah. And then, so did the zombie get out then?
He did get out anyway, yeah. Like, okay. I think maybe his arm came off or something. He got out. Yeah.
Okay.
And then you go through that sort of, I love this scene. I mean, I just love, I love the whole thing, but this scene in particular, I thought was such a clever way of playing with the genre conventions, because you're basically teaching Clementine how to play a point-and-click adventure. You know, like, you're telling her, you know, you've got a single scene, right? You have to get through the door, so there's keys. Uh-oh, there's a zombie in the way. Okay, but you've got handcuffs, so you're going to use that. Oh, now the zombie got out. How are you going to kill him, right? Like, you have all the trappings of a normal point-and-click adventure, and certainly a normal event in The Walking Dead. And this is the first time where, like, yeah, you've taught her to shoot, and she shot people, but, like, you were literally ushering her through the logic that goes into playing this type of game, which is just so, so well done, right? Yeah. Because you're, this is the way you're interacting with the world, right? And if you're going to teach somebody how to survive, you have to teach them how to survive given the rules of the world, right? And in this world, the skills that you teach Clementine in those final moments are literally how you survive.
Through those other four episodes that you as the player and you as Lee were also doing.
Right. Like, it's this great double play where it's, you're not just teaching Clementine, like, oh, here, Clem, this is how you survive. Like, you're going through the motions of a point-and-click adventure as though you're telling someone over their shoulder as they play a point-and-click adventure how to play that game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a double level of learning where it's like, you're teaching her the way to survive in the same way that you sort of understand the way to survive. So yeah, point and click adventure and all of these sorts of mechanics are they're just analogous to what you'd actually do, right? But the act of teaching her in that way just feels so right, because it's, you're not breaking anything, right? Like, it's perfectly, it's ludonarratively consistent in that in that realm.
Yeah, man, that's a really good way of putting it. That, and that was something that I hadn't really fully formed until you were just saying it that way, but it makes, yeah, it makes the ending even more, you know, even more powerful from a mechanical perspective too, which I really enjoyed, because I was mainly thinking about it from a thematic perspective.
Well, there's also another moment when, well, two moments really, when Lee first is sitting down and he's, and Clementine's crying and she wants him to get up, and you try to get up, right? And you're like, you see the same thing that you see normal in the game, right? Where you, if you click on Q, maybe you'll get up. Right.
Yep.
And there's this small shred of hope where I'm like, gosh, maybe he will get up, right? Maybe maybe I can carry her just a little farther. And so I'm slamming on that Q, right? Like, harder than I probably have ever slammed on it before.
Right.
And he doesn't get up. And there's this moment where, you know, like, okay, he's not going to get up. That's fine. This is the sort of game restraint. But then the zombie attacks her, or maybe it's another scene where, like, the zombie's getting out and you see the prompt again. And I don't, like, I really hit Q real hard. So hard. And, like, there's this it's such an awesome moment because no matter how hard you try, right, I don't think Lee will get up in that moment. Yeah. But there's that same level of desperation where, like, if there's any hope in this, any hope at all, then you're going to put your very best into making it happen.
Right, right.
And I think that's pretty close to what Lee's feeling in that moment, right? Like, if there's mm-hmm. any chance that he could get up, he will put all of his strength into getting up and saving her, but he can't. And that moment of, like, knowing you've let her down or knowing that you failed in that way, like, so good. It's so mm-hmm. good. And all done through that same interaction that we're used to, but now we're unable to see that. What we're used to see our actions realized in an outcome, we don't get to see that anymore.
Right, right. Precisely. So this is the point where it's like the big ultimate decision, right?
Yep.
The decision that's not, well, I guess it could, it's yours a little bit. I tried to make it not about Lee, which is the decision that Clementine has to make about whether or not to shoot Lee before she leaves.
Mm-hmm. I had her shoot Lee.
Wow. So I went to, you know, I went into it and she was like, you know, what's going to happen to you? And Lee was basically like, well, you know what needs to happen if you don't want that to happen to me, you know? Like, I didn't really say it explicitly, but it was understood that either, you know, Lee has to be shot or you have to leave because he's going to turn into a zombie. Mm-hmm. And then I basically just stayed silent for the rest of the conversation. Like, I chose not to put any dialogue option in.
Yeah.
And she left. She didn't shoot him.
Wow. So you didn't have any last words to her?
Well, my last words were like, you know, take care of yourself, you know, yeah. You know, always, stay safe and stay alert. And, you know, he said something about how he cares for her or something like that. But
I miss you or whatever.
Yeah. But, you know, there's always options to be like, there was an option to be like, you know, go or shoot me or, you know, whatever. And I just stayed silent. Like I didn't. You know, I left the decision up to her, basically, what she was going to do.
So I've heard, like, four different people's explanations of that scene, and every single one of them have been different.
Huh.
And every single one has been legitimate to me, you know? Like, I never would have thought about playing in that way. But that, I kind of like that. Like, you gave her the option, right? And, like, after you've taught her how to interact with this world, like, the option is sort of hers in that way.
Yeah. And that's exactly, well, I mean, from a meta perspective, I wanted to see what she would do given no instructions to see if the game had been kind of keeping track of Clementine's, you know, attitude or whatever.
Right.
But also, like, I just didn't want my last request of her to be something that would, like, potentially scar her for life. Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, the reason I did it is because, and it's funny because someone else had put it in the same way of, like, if there's a last thing I can give Clementine, right? Like, I've given everything else I can to save her. It's the assurance that she's not going to have to see me the way that she saw her parents ever.
Yeah.
She's never going to come into this town and see me shambling and having to deal with that, right?
Like, yeah.
She knows what happens to me. She knows that I'm gone and all of that. And two, to sort of usher her into that comfort zone of, like, this might not even be the last time you do this, but it might be the last time you do it where the person you're doing it to loves you and wants you to do it and is encouraging you, you know, like trying to make it okay.
Right.
You know, like it, in my vision of it, it was the last sort of gift he could give to her mm-hmm. in that moment.
Yeah. Totally legitimate. Like, I think all, like, the entire, it's kind of the MO of The Walking Dead in general. Like, all decisions are understandable. None are ideal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, like, I was just, people were cutting onions left and right in that scene. Like, and there's that great scene when, you know, Lee's stumbling and, like, Clementine is, like, helping him up. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I was really surprised by how well that scene came through. And, you know, you and I were talking about how, like, well, maybe Clementine will be a zombie. And, you know, we know that you might have to have her kill you and all of that. So,
yeah, yeah.
Still have that much freedom in your hands to decide, like, how those final moments go.
Right.
But no matter which decision you make, still feels right and sad and like an end to things.
Mm-hmm. A fitting end too.
Yeah. I mean, because to me, like, he says, I think my last words were like, don't be afraid. She right. does it. You hear the gunshot and then the credits roll. That's that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's not, you don't get a sort of, I mean, you do get an epilogue, but, you know, I'd expected to maybe control Clementine in those moments or have her, you know, show her walking away or give me another way to interact with the world and have my choices carry out. But it feels good that the last way they interact with the world is by having her take the reins of control. And then I don't have any more input. Like, it's not, you know, this is, it's so weird because the game's about a lot of things, but I guess ultimately it's about Lee, and to have him be the last sort of view of that world is really mm-hmm. fitting.
I was really happy as well that, because I was kind of worried that they would give you control of Clementine in that ultimate moment.
Right.
And I think that would be undercutting what the game had been about to that point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was, and you know, it takes a lot of restraint because you never really want, you know, it's one of like kind of the cardinal sins in video games, like taking control away from the player. But like, it just, the entire series actually goes to show that done judiciously, that can be just as powerful, you know?
Yep.
And so that was, yeah, I was very happy to see that, that ending. Although I felt terrible after I played it. I was it was just kind of, it was just depressing, you know?
Oh yeah. It's harsh. I played that and Nicole was nearby and I was just like, that was awesome. Like, you have to play this game. It's so good. You know, and we see a final epilogue, right? We see, and I'm presuming it's the same with you, right? Clementine's in a field.
Yep.
She's looking all sad. Presumably she left the city. And mm-hmm. you see the silhouette of two people walking in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Who could potentially be Omid and Krista.
Or two road agents, or two zombies, or two anybody, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah.
And then it ends. I thought that was a little bit cheap. I didn't really like that all that much.
I kind of agree, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, from a practical perspective, I understand that what with the response to this, they will do a second season.
They damn well better.
Yeah. so I understand kind of that sort of thing, but it seemed a little pulpy at the very end of something that felt very original and genuine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nothing that is, like, you know, ruinous to the entire package. It was just a little bit more kind of conventional, I feel.
Yeah. All right, so final thoughts on the whole shebang?
Oh, man. I feel like this is, like, the best possible thing that could happen for Telltale, because, like, I feel like they were kind of in a rut, you know?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree, yeah. And really, at least in my life, it's the best way to salvage point-and-click adventures and episodic gaming for me, because it's not something that I do a lot. Like, a few point-and-clicks, you know, maybe twice a year, right?
Right.
Episodic gaming I never had much hope for because there are so many limitations, and this really just proved to me that there's so much possibility, even though it's not, you know, it's not exactly the most innovative or most daring game.
Yeah.
You know, like Michael Abbott recently wrote an article about mentioning it briefly amongst other great games of this year, and said that this is proof that a genre that we know done right could be some of the best things out there.
Right.
You know, and like, it's right. not just that it did it right. It did it right and better than so many other people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know, going back to Michael Abbott's post that you referenced, I mean, it's like the opposite of kind of you know, there's like a certain group of people of which we are a part of that are that kind of hold procedurally generated and like emergent gameplay style games as kind of like a noble pursuit.
Yes, absolutely.
And that this is like exactly the opposite, you know, but it shows how, but choice is still paramount, you know, like there is emergent material that comes out of The Walking Dead, but it is because the choices and the limitations are such that emotions and reactions emerge in the player rather than systemic happenings in the game. And it's just as valid and just as powerful, even if everyone has very similar experiences. It's something that only the game could have done for them. You know?
I totally agree. Because, you know, like it is a heavily scripted and shaped narrative. But you can't experience this in any other medium. Like, there's no way this could be recreated in television, film, comic book, right?
Right.
And in my opinion, it's one of the best uses of The Walking Dead fiction precisely because of that. You know, and I'm not the only one to say this, but, like, this is what Heavy Rain wanted to be, you know? Like, this is what so many other types of video game fiction has wanted to achieve, and they did it.
I mean, this is what, like, since, like, the 90s and the multimedia era when we were, like, going to be like, oh, you could interact with your movies. Yeah. And then, like,
you'll finally cry in video games. And
right. Yeah. Yeah, precisely. Like, this is, and, you know, we never really got there. And it was always kind of a weird thing to chase anyway. And I feel like, you get there kind of not by chasing that specifically, but it just kind of happening organically, you know?
That's why, like, again, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Like, this isn't just a great game. I think it's a really important one. You know, like, I think this is something people should play if they're interested in games and game design, period. Yeah. And even if you're not, because I think it can teach you a lot about what it is to interact with this type of world and this type of storytelling.
Yeah, definitely. Man, all right.
And, you know, they won Game of the Year at the VGAs last night, right? Like, the classic bro-fest that we're used to. They gave it to The Walking Dead. Like, how awesome is that?
Yeah. I mean, just as kind of a watershed moment in where the industry is, kind of from, you know, a distribution perspective and a financial perspective, like, you know, this could very well be kind of like a fulcrum, like the idea that a weird episodic, like, $20 game is, you know, one of the most important things out there, even for a mainstream audience, is pretty fascinating.
Yep. Yep.
So people should play this, right, George?
No, it's fine. Whatever. Eh, give or take.
What's the fun factor?
What's the fun factor? How does it compare to Black Ops 2? That's my, you know.
Well, you'll know, because we'll have to do our Black Ops review soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, as always, if you want to write in with your comments or questions, suggestions, we're always here at experiencepoints@gmail.com.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. Come on down, leave your thoughts and your comments and your decisions to what you did in The Walking Dead on this podcast. And of course, you can leave us a review and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher now. We're on Stitcher, Scott.
Oh, man. This is truly, truly big changes.
So much stitching.
Okay, until then, thanks so much for listening. Really appreciate it, as always, and take it easy.
Bye-bye.